the tag team champions. I'm the tag team champions.
I'm the tag team champions.
I'm the tag team champions.
It is with a heavy heart and the utmost sadness that I officially announce my retirement.
Oh man, emotional farewell for Daniel Bryan last week. We're still feeling the effects here in the As the Heel Turns studio.
It's a sad time,
but a happy time as well, because you know we're happy that he's moved on. But we'll talk about that in a second. I'm your host, Alexander K. Lee, aka Big Al, with of course Dario Pop Passarelli. We're again two man crew today, but Connor Dorian, the most handsome man in the professional wrestling podcast world, always with us in spirit.
Spirits, sorry, did you mention alcohol?
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Oh, I got a little excited there. But sad day for not having Connor around as well. But like I said, it was not surprising, the news for Daniel Bryan.
No, not at all.
We kind of knew that this was probably the most likely outcome. But nonetheless, when somebody is not allowed to do what they love, it's always a very sad feeling.
Yeah, and like you said, in some ways it's good to see, and we're at peace now, because for the last maybe better part of the last year or so, or at least ever since he was stripped of the Intercontinental title and, you know, told that he had to take time away from the ring, every week it was like, oh, is he going to come back, or how's he doing, is he going to come back? And at least now there's resolution to it, and I think a good resolution. He's, as far as we know, he's made a good amount of money, you know, in the WWE. It's not like they can't bring him back to train, to still do appearances and things like that. I could see him, I hate it, but I'm sure someday he'll be the GM of Raw from you know.
I was just looking forward to it.
I'm sure he will be. And in that sense, it's good. You know, it's good that he's not going to put his body through what he's been putting it through for us, you know, for our sake, for the last 15 years or so.
So I thought, you know, that maybe he might kick it up a bit, you know, finally take some time and relax at home. He has been wrestling for, 16 years. And, you know, let the woman earn the money. But now I hear that, you know, she's probably gone within the next few months as well to start the family that they had mentioned. So much for that.
And I think that's a good thing. Like, I'm really happy for them. Obviously, I was happy for CM Punk and AJ. I think, you know, the CM Punk thing, as bad as that went, I don't think it went as bad for AJ as we all thought it would. I think there was a lot of people saying, like, oh, well, now that Punk's gone, AJ is the one that's going to take the brunt of the, you know, all the garbage that he would have taken, you know, if he'd stuck around or for slighting the company. And it's like, she didn't really. She lost the belt, and that was about it. I think they still showcased her pretty well. I don't remember them putting her in any particularly demeaning angles or anything. And then when she left, she just left. They didn't bury her character at all.
She left on her own terms, which I think is you know, what more do you want?
Yeah, and if, right? Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella could do the same thing, I think that's awesome. I think, like, you know me, I'm not the biggest Bella Twins fan, either of them. But, you know, I don't wish any. I don't know her personally. I don't even really know Daniel Bryan personally. But
We don't?
Hey, they put in, you know, she put in her time for sure with the company, whether I enjoyed it or not. And, you know, good. I hope that they go on and just can go on to some degree of normalcy, though I don't know if you can do that after being in the wrestling business for so long.
The one thing that about that Monday in particular that took me by surprise, well, not by surprise, but something that I was made aware of, was the fact that they had tweeted it out earlier in the day. And I went, wow, I wonder why they did that, which sounds like a really stupid question to ask. But number one, it was, I think, one of the highest rated Raws in the last little while, which only makes sense. But two, I think there was another reason why they did it, because I'm old enough, I remember when Edge retired, and there was no pre-notice of it. And half the crowd actually booed, thinking it was a work. Think it was part of it. And even us watching it that day going, is it for real? Like, we weren't even sure whether it was going to be a work or not, or whether it was for real. But I think they took a lot of that sting out of it by mentioning it ahead of time and prepping us for it. And I think that actually got the audience the proper reaction, and not some of those, you know, marks out there who thought, it might be a work and didn't, you know, fall into what needed to be done that night.
Yeah, and I'm glad they gave it the proper respect too as well, making it the main event and clearly letting him go out there unscripted. You know, he did a very nice little speech about being grateful. You know, that was really the theme, obviously.
Yep.
And, you know, they just let him do his thing, because you know, I'll always say he wasn't one of the best talkers. But when you let someone be themselves and talk about something they're passionate about, of course they're going to do a good job, you know. So I think he did fine work. And, you know, we'll talk about his promo work in the past, though, because I know, as much as I just said, criticized him, he actually has had a lot of memorable outside of the ring moments as well as in the ring moments, right?
Oh, again, I always go back to Team Hell No.
Yeah.
As we did at the beginning, I am the tag, you know. I love that. You know, being an English major, I am the tag team. I mean, everything there worked on it. His angle with Kane, the therapy sessions. I mean, again, I thought it was all fantastic work.
That was really one of his gifts, aside from, and an unexpected gift, because, look, prior to coming to the WWE, he had a name for himself on the independent scene. Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, widely regarded as probably one of the three best North American workers, you know, during his time, even way before he was with the WWE. So I'd heard of him and I'd seen some of his matches and I thought, oh, this guy's great. I said, but there is no way this guy will ever, ever make it in the WWE. Because he didn't even have the beard back then. Keep in mind, he didn't have the beard back then. He's not short. He's what?
No,
5'10",
no,
5'11".
No. Say it, you know, make fun of us short people. Go right ahead.
Well, he's like
all the time.
He's like 5'11", I think. I think he's taller than both of us, so I don't know if he's really short.
For a wrestler.
Yeah. And not particularly muscular. Again, anyone who, for I'm sure most people, and anyone who listens to us knows, but anyone who hasn't seen, you know, Google Ring of Honor Daniel Bryan, you'll see he's such a plain-looking guy. And you're like, how would this person ever translate to
not
the
even,
WWE?
Not even a guy. He's a boy.
He looked like a boy. Very young.
Very
baby facious, right? Yeah. So the beard obviously helped later, but you know, they didn't bring him in with the beard. So when they brought him up and they had him come into NXT and they did the really smart thing of teaming him up with The Miz, which was hilarious, and it got internet people raging. But I think those of us who knew what the WWE was trying to do were laughed. It was funny. It was very smart.
In the right way, correct.
And that was the first indication that this guy could get himself over besides with just his wrestling. I mean, obviously, his matches were good even then. You know, he did a match with Jericho, which was great, and with Miz early on, and a program with The Miz. And the amazing thing was, not just that he could work with them, that you were already starting to see something about his, that, and this is something that fans of his had said, again, before he joined, that I wasn't aware of, because again, I wasn't a huge, you know, super into that kind of indie stuff before. People had said, he'll find a way. You know, people who were fans of his said, he'll find a way, because he's a good wrestler. And good wrestlers find ways to get themselves over, you know? And I'm like, okay, we'll see. I don't know about that. And sure enough, you know, he does all those little things, right, that we talk about with, like, Kevin Owens now. Kevin Owens is the guy now, we say. He does so many little things that he doesn't need creative to be – he doesn't need creative's help. He doesn't need hot angles. He just gets – no matter what city he goes to, he will get himself over, because that's what a good wrestler does.
Quick sidebar, and he's finally fully dressed again with the belt. But go on.
We'll talk about that later for sure. But so then, you know, he does the NXT thing. It's good. There's that little bump in the road. He gets fired because of the awesome NXT, you know, angle with John Cena, where he allegedly went too far with choking Justin Roberts with a tie, which was a little too soon to, you know, some other violent incidences related to wrestling. So he got fired for that. He was still in the back of the fans' minds, though. And then so when he was announced as a mystery partner against the Nexus at, I believe it was the following SummerSlam or a pay-per-view coming up after that, fans went nuts. That was so exciting. And I thought, man, is this – it was hard to tell. I was like, I still think this is like a hardcore reaction. I was like, I don't know if everyone's behind it. I think there's just a lot of hardcore fans who are pushing it. So I didn't buy it fully. And then he wins at some point down the road. He turns heel and he wins the World Heavyweight title, which was unreal. I mean, I know we always say that World Heavyweight title is the secondary kind of world title, but
right, the SmackDown title.
But that's a world title. That's a title that prior to that was held by like Triple H, Batista, Randy Orton.
Certainly
like,
has a well-renowned list of you know, there was associated with it.
Booker T. You know, there was it's a world title. It was a recognized world title at the time.
Regardless of how many ways you look at it, there were only two quote-unquote heavyweight championship belts out there, and he had one of them.
And he was never supposed to make it that far. And it was a Money in the Bank cash-in, so it was a safe way to do it. And it was a bit lukewarm at first, but then he brought over the Tony Robbins, or whoever you want to credit to, Tony Robbins, Diego Sanchez, UFC fighter Diego Sanchez, the Yes Chants. And they were, at the time, they were so annoying, like, in a good way. Like, you know, fans, because he was a heel at the time, the fans were like, just shut up. But he was so good at being that obnoxious guy, overly, almost like a pre-New Day.
Very pompous.
Oh.
And I always go back to that one interaction. I'm sure it happened a lot more often, but I always remember that one interaction at ringside with one fan. and he'd be doing yes, and the fan would be answering no, and it was just going back and forth. And it was literally, it was just that one moment between two people, but everybody watching, everybody in the arena wanted to be that guy.
Yep.
And that to me was all of a sudden went how a two or three or letter word, all of a sudden, is this footsteps of making you a superstar.
Yeah, it was amazing. People, again, people forget that it was a heel move at first. That was to get heat, not to get people to chant with him. That was to get heat at first.
And it worked.
And it worked. So it was so aggravating. And he used the fact that he's a little guy. I mean, they used that because it was like he was feuding with like the Big Show and Mark Henry, which normally I'd roll my eyes. But now it's more like, oh, he's this little pest who, like, these guys should be beating him up, but he just keeps finding, you know, classic heel thing. He just keeps finding ways to sneak away, and, like, how can it be?
That little fly on a perfect summer's day
yeah.
that you hear and then you feel, yes, you know, doesn't hurt you in any way, but, man, it just bleeps you.
Yeah, and why does he keep getting the better of you? It's like, he's not hurting. I don't understand. How does he keep getting out on top and getting away? Then the relationship stuff with AJ Lee. Oh, you know, people forget that again. That she was a well liked wrestler for sure, and then but after her involvement with Daniel Bryan and that whole angle, and it put them both just
the
like,
wedding ceremony, breaking you know breaking it off at the last. You felt for Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
At that point, and yeah, all together. Like I said, I don't know how you write anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can because I think I said a lot of it is organic. A lot of it. No, if you could script it, they would be scripting it all the time.
Right.
But it is such a rare story.
Yeah. Now, obviously, I'm skipping over some stuff. Like, again, there's so much other good angles he was involved in and good matches. Go ahead to Team Hell No. And when I remember, at least maybe this was my reaction. I don't want to speak for the whole internet community or whatever or other fans. There was a sense of, like, why are they wasting Daniel Bryan's time by teaming up with Kane? They were like, you know, we're like, Daniel Bryan was just he lost the World Heavyweight title. I believe this was post Sheamus, right?
In 18 seconds, yeah.
Right, and we're like, oh, this is like BS. They're burying him. They're putting him with, you know, we all like Kane, but this is clearly not meant to go anywhere. But the two of them, Kane again, the ultimate company man. Will you tell him to do anything? He'll make the most out of it. Daniel Bryan, who again we just said can suddenly make anything into gold, almost right out of the gate, there was something there.
And they said, like, you know, it felt like they were trying to bear him. Not that they were trying to bear, but you felt that, you know what, he had his, they gave him an opportunity yep. at the headlight. Great, thank you. Now we're going to put you in mid-card, let you, you know, chill for a while yep. kind of thing. Boy, did they both grab that by the horns and said no.
And suddenly it became the biggest thing again, you know.
Little things, you know, like the hug in the middle of the ring. The 5.5 minute awkward hug was, again, well done acting.
Yeah, and the skits were funny too, but you're right. It's also just the stuff, the live stuff. Like, because skits are hit or miss, right? You know, those could have been bad. I think most of them have, I remember most of them were good. But you're right. When they're, those moments in the ring where they have the audience attention, where you're really in control, and then you do, you know, you do little things, the hug or a dirty look at the other guy, or, you know, refuse to tag, things like that. And it just, they just go, suck people in. It's fantastic.
And again, a credit to both of them for, you know, making that work. And, have we ever seen this before? Where a chant like no or yes, created from a heel position, now being used as a face? Like, I'm trying to think of all the other famous chants.
I guess what sort of started as a heel thing and he carried it over Stone Cold's what?
But, yeah, no, and was, again, built up. And then having the authority. You know, reminiscent back in the day where, you know, the biggest angle, what made the Attitude Era, in my eyes, was the Vince McMahon, Stone Cold, Steve Austin. And here you have Stone Cold, Steve Austin representing the average beer-drinking kind of guy. But in this case here, you have the authority, which is more of a corporate image. And they did, you know, a board of directors. It's more of a corporate time of day. And here you have a young Daniel Bryan who doesn't represent the swearing, beer-drinking kind of person, but the average common man,
yeah,
really.
Nice guy, and even average size. Because if you look at Stone Cold, Stone Cold's kind of a big guy. Like Stone Cold, we relate to him as a common man, but he's a pretty big
vest. He still has that bikerish kind
like
of feel.
Yeah, he's not like super jacked, but he definitely looks like a tough guy. You see Daniel Bryan walking to a bar, you'd be kind of like, oh, that's a guy. It's like a normal.
He's a mid marketing manager.
Nice looking, yeah.
You know,
normal, nice looking guy.
And again, so they had that same dynamic, and God, you know, he went. They punished him.
Yeah.
Week after week.
This is where you and I differ a little bit. Like, I always feel his last run of main event run with the company could have been handled better. But, you know, the payoff, I mean, there's no arguing with the payoff.
Right. To have that payoff, again, you don't write scripts like this, especially that WrestleMania, especially after him winning the belt, going outside the ring, and the first person he hugs is Connor. And we all know the story behind that.
Connor the Crusher, not Connor Dorian.
Correct. So perfect, and in a good way, you know, in terms of reaching out. So, yeah, it was great, and I would love to see what more, but today's not the day to say, you know, what could have been. Today's just the day to appreciate and Absolutely. Be grateful.
Yeah, just celebrate. And you know, he also, I think, gets credit for him, and I'll give credit to other people like John Cena as well, but for, I think, helping the current Raw format, well, at least not the last few episodes, but there's a stretch there where Raw had kind of a nice balance between storylines and like one or two sort of longer matches to sort of anchor the show. And I give him credit for that, because there was that stretch there where he was having great matches every week with like Randy Orton, Seth Rollins, Luke Harper, I think there was one week. And just showing you that week to week, you can have good matches on Raw. You know, that you don't need to, you know, necessarily save them for pay-per-views, which I'm an advocate of. But at the same time, I also feel like you can have a certain kind of good match on Raw and not necessarily have things be filler or, you know.
Or rely on the same three or four people to have your great matches on Raw. And I think that's, he opened up the card. And, you know, you look at NXT in terms of where it is now, and you see that, you know, Tyler Breeze would never have gotten a shot in the WWE without Daniel Bryan.
Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, yeah.
Finn Balor would never be a champion without Daniel Bryan. I mean, he broke down the barriers for the whole size thing in a lot of ways. I mean, there's people in the past.
Again, bring up Punk as well. I really think him and Punk, when the book is written, they're so intertwined, even though from a personality standpoint, I think they seem so different.
Right.
And also the way they went to the main event was also very different. But yeah, as far as being those indie Ring of Honor guys who, again, both of them I said would never, ever, ever get near a world title.
I think they broke Vince McMahon's mold of what a wrestler should look like. And then again, I look back to, you know, I even forgot his feud with Cena and how both of them handled so well about, you know,
it was great
about he was a wrestler. And Cena playing up, again, was just phenomenal.
And it's weird. That's almost a forgotten match, their SummerSlam match, where he went over Cena cleanly. That match is phenomenal. I think if anyone, really, the guys, Daniel Bryan has so many, and Cena both have so many good matches, I guess it's easy to forget this one. But that was an excellent match. And I wish that they'd almost built up on that more. It just bothered me that they still went like with the angle of like, oh, he can't win the big one. I'm like, he literally just won the biggest one he could have.
That was possibly. When Triple H was reffing, right?
Yeah.
And immediately lost the belt to Orton?
Yes.
It was that night.
It was that night, I think.
Yep.
Yes. Maybe that's why.
No, and I think that because I think Cena was hurt or something.
Something like that.
And then I think he was off for a while. But no, I would have loved to have seen something like that continue. You're absolutely right.
But like you said, let's focus on how crazy this guy's ride was. And as you to continue what you were just saying, opening the door for Finn Balor, Tyler Breeze, Samoa Joe was never, AJ Styles. These guys were not supposed to ever sign with the WWE. Yep. They were supposed to be content with working TNA, Japan, making good money in other places, and not worrying about WWE. But you're right. Because of the Daniel Bryans and the CM Punks, it's like, why not? Why not put these guys out there?
Or their ceiling was fodder for like low-end job status.
Joe and Styles had been jobbers on like Velocity before. You know what I mean? And that was it. That was what they saw them as.
If there's one moment, though, where I look back, and there's dozens, obviously, but one moment where I look back and go, the level of success that Daniel Bryan reached. I can't remember the event. Maybe you can help me out with that. There was a bunch of wrestlers in the ring. And I think they're talking about who should be the number one contender.
No, this was the unification. This was hyping up the unification belt between Randy Orton and John Cena.
You already know where I'm going.
I remember because someone was just talking about it recently. And they had all the champions. Yes, they had all the world heavyweight champions and the WWE champions. Some people had both, obviously. But yeah, they had them all standing together. And then?
And the crowd just took over. And they hijacked that segment. Literally hijacked that segment. With Daniel Bryan chants and yes chants, and the smile on his face. Like, if ever there was a time when this 5 foot nothing kind of small player stood 10 feet tall above every other wrestler, it was that moment right there.
Yeah, that was a great one, man. Like, for me, that was better and more organic than, you know, it was cool when they did all the fans in the ring, like, and he demanded his that was cool, but obviously kind of manufactured. You're right, that moment. And then they and bless the WWE production team, always top notch, like, they zoomed in on him, and he's got that snicker, like, he's got that very genuine snicker that, you know, it's not supposed to be part of the show, and he can't help himself. It's hilarious.
He almost felt that he was a little embarrassed.
Oh, big time. Of
like,
course,
like, oh, you're gonna get me in trouble here. Yeah. This is not the way it's supposed to go, but yeah. But thank you, because you couldn't help but smile.
Yep.
And he was grinning. That was a great, beautiful Daniel Bryan.
I agree. That really sums up his appeal, I think, of his run with the WWE. So happy trails, Daniel. We'll probably talk about him throughout the show. We can't help it. But thank you very much, Daniel Bryan. Let's move on to another guy who apparently might be moving on. One Mr. Wade Barrett is apparently not re-signing with the WWE when his contract comes up in June.
Okay, and now I just read, like, the title of an article on that. I didn't read it fully, so I don't know what the plans are. And again, is this one of the reasons why he hasn't been wrestling, or is he still hurt? Or because he sometimes doesn't even come out with the League of Nations. Now, mind you, if I'm Wade Barrett, or Rusev, or Sheamus, or Del Rio, I still wouldn't want to come out and walk out with the League of Nations. Well, this is not about them, because we already talked about them enough.
Boy, that's an awful stable, isn't it?
But when was the last time he wrestled?
It's been a long time. In like a one-on-one match, I cannot even remember. It has been a long, long, long time. It's probably some combination, definitely, of whatever the shaky backstage situation is for him, and also his constant injuries. I'm not sure what to say about it. I think it sounds cliche, and this is probably what everyone's take is going to be on it. When I think Wade Barrett, I think missed opportunities.
Yeah.
Right. Whether it's how they sort of mishandled the initial Nexus thing, I felt like he could have been a monster star if they'd let them look a little bit stronger instead of getting crushed by Cena. That was a huge mistake. And then, of course, later when the company, you know, there's a few times the company was trying to get behind him, and he just suffered an injury just at the wrong time. He had a huge feud with Randy Orton going. Got injured, he was out, and then you know, just recently he went, I think he was off one of his intercontinental title runs, he injured his shoulder again, and it's, man, I don't know if it's bad luck or if the guy's injury prone. It's always weird to say injury prone, because it's usually such a short period of a guy's career, but then,
well, I look at it right. And go, you know, same with you, in the sense that we've seen what we believe was WWE mishandling somebody's career or direction, and again, that's only our opinion, but we feel strongly that WWE has missed the opportunity in certain cases. I think with Barrett, it's almost like either you're both at fault or none of you are at fault, kind of thing. Because like you said, it just, whether it was the timing or whatever it was, it just didn't work. And if he is going to leave, like apparently it says he's going to leave, you know what? I think he can go to a place like TNA and build something up. I remember Christian leaving and going over and having a bit of success in terms of another promotion. Coming back, he was never the same. But then again, you know, maybe that's what they want. And I think maybe Barrett will be happier somewhere else.
Yeah, he can raise his own value. Right? Go somewhere and be happier, you're right, for a short term, and possibly raise his value for a future return to the WWE, if he even wants to do that. Right?
Even if it was Del Rio left and came back.
Right. We'll talk about that in a second. I have. Oh, I like Del Rio, but I have a major beef with him. But first I'll say, it's just weird with Barrett that things just never quite worked out again. The Nexus angle was so hot. He's a good wrestler. I'm not saying he's an amazing wrestler, but he's definitely a good wrestler. He's got a good look, big, tall, you know, muscular, handsome guy. He's got an international flavor. You know, he's an Englishman. You know, that helps. They love that with their overseas tours. It was just, it's hard for me to pinpoint a time where I could have said, oh, they should have pushed him to, you know, to the top, to be a top three guy, maybe. I'll be honest, I can't think of a window where that was. But that doesn't mean, you know, that doesn't mean that they shouldn't have tried. Right? No, I can't think of it, but again, I'm not getting paid to do it.
The only time he was, I think, a top three heel, because I don't think he ever was a face either. I think the only time he was a top three heel was right at the beginning with Nexus. And like you said, so quickly, so short, and all the time they try and reinvent him, Bad News Barrett, King Barrett, just none of it seemed to.
That's the one situation where they messed up was Bad News Barrett, because apparently, you know, they had told, because it was getting, I think it was getting too many positive reactions, they just told him to stop doing it. That was a huge, that killed him. I think he did end up getting injured again anyway, so the timing sort of, it was just all bad. But they kind of pulled the rug out from under him at that time, and that was, that I remember I was infuriated, because I thought the gimmick was dumb at first, and I thought that he really took it and ran with it, and then they told him to stop doing it. And I don't, if I was him, that would just mess with my head.
Honestly, I didn't see him moving up the chain and then in the near future anyways.
Yeah, I agree. Now, we mentioned Del Rio. Happy to have the guy back. He's a good wrestler. He maybe has the worst finisher in all of professional wrestling right now.
Oh, I remember those tweets on Monday night.
Boy, that is, that finisher is straight up horrible.
Oh, no, it's devastating. But if I'm fighting you, can you just hold on to that rope? Just hold on to that rope. Please, please.
How?
Please hold on to that rope so I can do my finisher, please.
We live in a reality. If you're a wrestling fan, you live in a reality where guys can, you know, grab a guy's arm and give him a little shove in the back and send him running across the ring towards the ropes. And the guy, okay, fine. We live in the world of the Irish whip. We live in a world where guys seem to fall and always seem to fall near that angle in the corner so someone can jump off and hit with a splash. I get it. Okay, I get it.
The 30-second 10 count.
The 30-second 10 count. There's thing 10 count. We live in the people's elbow, the worm, five knuckle shuffle.
Dean Ambrose going through the ropes and bouncing back.
This
just wait there while I do my move.
Del Rio's stupid double stomp thing makes that rebound clothesline look like something from like the friggin' UFC. Okay, this is the dumbest finisher. This is way worse than Cena's stunner. Cena's stunner, at least, I mean, it looks like garbage, but at least it makes sense in a quote-unquote competitive standpoint. How do they, like, I hate to use the term psychology because I know we're fans, and for us to assume we know anything about in-ring psychology is a bit presumptuous, I know. But from what little I know of it, this move psychologically makes no sense.
Yeah, that's my rebuttal.
It's cheap. It's a cheap move. It's such a good idea. It's like, okay, if it's like a counter, like if the other guy is trying to pull himself up and you could do it really quickly. But he takes so long to do it. It makes both of them look stupid. It is a horrible move, and they're trying so badly to get it over. I know, look, the cross arm breaker is not a great finisher either. So I know they wanted to give him something different. And the super kick to like the kneeling guy, I guess too many people are doing super kicks, so it's not believable as a finisher, though he did beat John Cena with it. So they said, okay, let's try this double stomp thing. Though it's going to be messed up when Finn Balor comes up, because he's got a much better looking double stomp.
And it makes more sense.
I understand where they're coming from with it. It just looks so horrible. Finger of shame to Del Rio and for the roadies backstage, the road agents, you know, the ex-wrestlers backstage who normally are supposed to police these things. Because it is a horrible move, and it takes me completely out of any match he's in when he does it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it doesn't even look all that good. Like, even things like Randy Orton's kick to the head.
Uh-huh.
Or Seth Rollins when he had the curb stomp.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Like, just lie there, I kept thinking. Right? But they're... At least those were still believable to agree where people are trying to get up, right? And they're there waiting for them trying to get up. That makes sense.
That's a good point. Like, that's, you know, it's always tricky to talk about logic. But you're right. That's a good point. Someone is knocked down. Their instinct is to try and get up. There's no scenario in professional wrestling where we see a guy regularly in that situation where they're kind of caught between the second and third rope trying to pull themselves. Like, if that was a common image, we'd be like, oh, okay, that's... You know, that's a counter to that. But that image doesn't exist. That image was created solely almost like for this move.
Exactly.
You're right. Okay, but let's not beat a dead horse. I'm sure the majority of people out there agree with us, as they do everything, right? Because we're right. Let's move on to talk a little about, you know, since Kalisto is part of this fiasco with his finisher because he's always taking it, the Cruiserweight series. Connor Dorian has been an advocate of introducing a cruiserweight belt for a long time, and I'm against it because I feel like cruiserweights and heavyweights and whatever weight these guys are now mingle too much already, so it doesn't make sense to have a cruiserweight belt. Now, a cruiserweight tournament every year, that's another story. Like a little trophy, like just a hold that you can't, like, you know, it's not defended or anything. It's just, you know, you hold it and you win it. It's just kind of a yearly exhibition. That's kind of exciting.
King of the Ring,
right?
Kind of thing.
And with just cruiserweights. And if this is an excuse for them to, like, test the waters with certain NXT guys, or, like, you could put Johnny Gargano in there, right? Without officially calling him up. You could just have him,
man,
as part of this tournament.
Now you're making sense.
You're right? Isn't that cool?
And I already said you're right once.
Well, you said we're right, so you're really just including yourself. So
okay, I am. But you know what? I didn't even, never thought of it that way. But I mean, that honestly does. Like you said, if you have a cruiserweight belt, then you run the risk of what happened back in WCW, where you make it, well, you have your own belt, you shouldn't be going for the championship belt, and then you limited people. Like an Eddie Guerrero, like a Rey Mysterio Jr., like he who shall not be named. I mean, you limit these people, like a Chris Jericho, that can work at that higher level. I don't want to say higher level, but at that championship level, at the heavyweight level. But to have it as a tournament, a yearly tournament, that to me, like, I think is great. Because then you do get, you know, a slightly different brand of wrestling. Maybe you do have a flair of more of a luchador type style. You can introduce a lot of these things, and like you said, do it in a test of water kind of tournament. And it could be run from one pay-per-view to the next kind of thing. It doesn't have to be like one pay-per-view. It can be a Raw thing. You have two matches a week on Raw kind of thing. I mean, there's so many different possibilities, but I think that's fantastic to have something along those natures.
Rich Swann.
I won't dance. You know what? I'm gonna.
And the good thing is, it would be like a soft debut. Like you could still. I feel like you could still re-debut them after the tournament. Like it's just sort of a soft thing. Like here's Rich Swann. And then, you know, don't do a big introduction. Just put him in a match with the Kalisto or something. And then you can always do a real Rich Swann debut later. But just kind of like give people like a preview of what these guys can do.
Or even if you have him come back the following year and enter the tournament again. Kind of thing, like even if he's not going to become part of your main roster, you can still have these people still be part of it. And I think, like I said, it'll help grow the business, and I think it'll be something a little bit different. But you know, one of the things that I thought about coming over here about Daniel Bryan was looking at the smaller type wrestlers and what you can do with them. Like I remember a time when you had the Undertaker going against a Jeff Hardy. You want to make Jeff Hardy believable as a heavyweight champion, you have The Undertaker, like, finally at the end, just, kid, stay down. And, you know, got up, and you just, you know, kept getting up and up and up and barely. And I can't remember the name of the other wrestler. Triple H did it to somebody, too. He was part of the U.S. Tag Team Champions. Oh, he used to be able to run up the ladders really well.
Shelton Benjamin.
Shelton Benjamin had a match at Triple H, and it was, I think it was just another example of where, you know, kid, you're getting the bejeebas pounded out of you. Just stay down. And you sort of got enamored with wrestlers of that kind who are fighting the bigger guy. And went, you know what? If he just got one break his way, he could win. And that's how you make them believable.
You know, I was going to move on to Raw, but that actually helps me transition to another topic I want to talk about today.
Damn, I'm good.
Let's look at the title matches here. I'm not going to count the pre-show. There's the Kalisto Del Rio, which I think should be on the pay-per-view. 2 out of 3 falls match, but, you know, that's another story. Here are the other three matches, title matches. Charlotte and Brie Bella for the Divas title. Kevin Owens, Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental title. And I think that's it. I'm sorry, I thought there was a New Day thing. But here's what I want to bring up. Let's just talk about these two matches then. Charlotte, Brie Bella, Owens, Ziggler. Do you have any urge whatsoever to see the babyfaces win the title in these matches?
Okay, I thought you were actually going to ask a different question, so I'm going to answer the question I thought you were going to ask. I have interest in both of these matches.
That's fine.
Simply because I wonder what they're going to do with Brie before she goes on her break.
But do you want to see her? Are you rooting for Brie or Dolph Ziggler to win?
Definitely not for Dolph Ziggler. Even though I like wrestling, I like Kevin Owens better. In the case of Charlotte and Brie, it's not that I like Charlotte any better than Brie, because I don't like either of them all that much. I just think it'd be really bad for her to lose the belt this early.
But here's my thing, though, is if it was somebody else, you know, we always talk about they can't build main event babyfaces anymore. I'm worrying they can't build babyfaces at all, because I can't think of a feud where I'm, like, rooting for the babyface to win, title feud specifically. I can't think of a title feud where I want the babyface to win. Look at the Usos and New Day. I don't think they're feuding anymore, but there was no situation where I wanted the Usos to beat them, and even most fans have turned against the Usos. So what happened here? What went wrong here that they've created? Are these the babyfaces are so bland that people just do not want to see them? It goes beyond like, oh, being a quote unquote smart wrestling fan and like, oh, I'm, you know, I like the heels because they're mean and they're doing their job well. And it goes beyond that. It goes beyond the babyface characters just not being interesting at all. And again, I think even people
society.
Who, yeah, maybe.
I think it just literally goes down to, and it transcends that. My favorite character on TV right now.
Sterling Archer.
Well, yeah, but Lucifer.
Oh, right. Oh,
right. Like, I mean, he's the devil, and he's the coolest cat that's out there, man. I just. If there was a character that I want to be, I want to walk around in, you know, $5,000 suits, you know, drinking my whiskey and having all these beautiful women around me. Like, I mean, yeah. But he's a devil. I think it's more of a society thing than anything else. And you're right, though. The Cena's probably the only babyface that I would cheer for right now.
That's so messed up, right? Like, well, how messed up is that?
And look at the title match itself.
Oh, by the way, I should say this podcast is brought to you by Lucifer on Fox every week, Monday nights. The check is in the mail, right, Bob?
I hope so. just give me a date with one of the women there, please.
All right, I'm cheap. You're going beyond your corporate responsibilities.
Fifth of Bourbon would also work.
Bob, you're going beyond your corporate responsibilities now.
Hey, the blues is the devil's music. I'll take a few songs there too.
But yeah, and you know, people have been saying that for a long time that John Cena is really like the only babyface they built, and
that's with half of the company, not company, but half of the WWE universe cheering against them too.
Yeah. And you reminded me with the Jeff Hardy thing. Like that's probably the last guy before John Cena, or along with John Cena, that they built up from scratch. You know, he was a job boy, you know, with his brother. They had the great tag team things, but you know, being a tag team success did not guarantee single success, right? A lot of people have great tag team success, and eventually when he broke out on his own, so many things could have gone wrong. But you're right, they kept putting him in situations that built him up and built him up, built up his character, you know, put him in situations where he was comfortable talking because he's not a great talker, put him in good, let him show off his great matches, his great, you know, his great athleticism, build him up again, build up his character. And I mean, even today he's a made man. Like Jeff Hardy is still, if he came back to WWE, it would be a huge deal. And he's still a huge deal on, I think is he still with TNA? But
I think so, yes.
But he was made. WWE made him from nothing. And they just cannot do that anymore.
No, because, again, like you look at their faces right now. You have Dean Ambrose, who's a psycho.
Yeah.
You have Roman Reigns.
Move on. Something nice to say. No, I'm kidding.
You have Brock Lesnar.
Who's a bully, like the biggest bully in the world. Yeah.
And these are your faces.
Your three top three baby faces right now.
And they're all in one match.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But, and again, and now, like, you're fighting the Wyatts. And who are the baby faces there? Big Show, Ryback, Kane.
Can you believe that?
Are your faces.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, and I they have a big problem, and like I said, I think a lot of that has to do with what society is garnered to.
Yeah, people change, fans change for sure. That's for sure. One face I'm definitely not going to cheer is Brie Bella anytime soon. I'm sorry, I it's weird. You know, we're saying we're happy for her, but that doesn't mean I have to enjoy her work. So, and this isn't entirely her fault. Her segment with Charlotte on Raw was atrocious. Now, you're telling me you skipped it. I'll just give you Neither of these women are the strongest performers character-wise. So they gave them about, and maybe it just felt like 10 minutes, but I feel like it was 10 minutes of them going back and forth, obviously leading up to more cheap heat. Somehow Charlotte keeps finding herself in these segments with cheap heat. Like, oh, your husband's a bum now, and your kids are going to have ugly beards. And it's just, it's so corny. And again, prior to that, there's a lot of this just perfunctory dialogue, which serves no purpose. And Brie is just one of the worst actresses. I should watch Total Divas because I'm sure she's maybe more convincing on that show. But when you put her live on a mic on Raw,
she's a better actress on the reality show, yeah, right?
She is. So I'll tell you how Brie Bella reads. It's like when you have a student doing a speech in grade school. A really keener student. They over accentuate things kind of, and like there's a very obvious rhythm to it. So it's like, it'd be like, "My name is Brie Bella. I'm here to challenge for the WWE Divas title." And it's like you don't, it's like people don't, she thinks people don't speak English or something, or don't understand her. And again, that probably comes from whatever training they give these performers to speak in public, which is like, I guess that's the safest way to do it. But it's also incredibly boring. And it
fake.
Makes me and
feels
incredibly
so
funny.
Fake. Yeah.
And Charlotte is also a phony on the microphone. So imagine these two going back and forth. Someone should be fired for allowing this. It was terrible.
I don't recall the segment all that much.
Good.
The one thing that I think I do remember was watching them talk, and she had the microphone and the belt over her shoulder, I think, if I can recall right now. And Brie was there, and just looking at it going, out of the people there, the only person that should be talking is Rick. Because
yeah.
He's got more talent than the other two combined and then multiplied by 1,000, and he's the only one that doesn't say anything.
I think they're afraid of giving him a live microphone now.
Because right? Of the kiss?
You know what? Let's talk about that kiss for one thing. I didn't... Maybe I'm a horrible person. I didn't think that was a big deal.
I'm still trying to figure out what the deal was.
People are saying it was, I don't know, sexist or something. But I'm like... Okay, look, I understand that we live in a society where it's different. Like, when a female valet does it to distract a male, it's different for some reason. And that's fine. I can. It is different. Whatever. It's.
You know what's sexist, though?
Go ahead.
Their reaction.
Whose?
WWE's.
What was their reaction? Oh, they edited it out.
Not only did they edit it out, but they also, like, swept it under the ground. They didn't do anything about it. What should have happened is there should have been some kind of punishment. There should have been like HR involved. Like I mean, like if you're going to be a reality show and something like this happens, like if this happened in a company, HR would have been involved. There would have been some kind of either, you know, not necessarily going to fire him, but there would be some kind of, you know, classes he'd have to take. There'd be some kind of, you're not allowed at ringside anymore. Like,
oh, you want a whole angle out of
let's,
it.
Why not?
No, they're not going to do that. They don't know how to do that anymore.
But my point is you can do the angle in a way that says, hey, it's not like saying, oh, look, the WWE condones this kind of stuff. It's like, look, we're like any other business. This stuff happens. Here's how we deal with it.
Yeah.
Here's how you should.
I agree. They should have addressed it in storyline. I agree with that. Yeah. And I'll just say it's okay for me because it's a heelish thing. One. And he got his comeuppance immediately. Didn't she slap him? Didn't she like smack the taste out of his mouth? He got his comeuppance immediately. It's not like he did it in like, oh, hey, kids, this is cool. This is what you should. It's like, no, he's clearly the bad guy in the story. I think the point is you should never, ever do that. You know, that's not how to behave. He's a creepy old man at this point. You don't want to behave like that. So I don't understand how people can say like that. They thought it like, I don't think the WWE was endorsing that at all. Like, I don't know. We talk about this more and more every week, and it's an issue, I think, every week, just in society in general, of when is it okay to be outraged? And for different people, it's different. You know, I don't want to tell people, oh, well, you shouldn't be offended by this, because that's not fair, right? Some people are offended by certain things, and
right?
So I won't go that far. But I will say in this situation, there was a bit too much, a bit of ado about nothing. Yeah.
I'd go back to, you know, during the Attitude Era, did they cross the line?
Many times.
Many times I thought they crossed the line, both in a sexual way, in a violent way. I mean, having a bathing suit contest where the bathing suit is paint, that probably crosses the line. You know, having a match, I remember, I think it was Stone Cold or Triple H against Mankind, and having Mankind take 18 chair shots to the head, that's a bit excessive.
Yeah.
You know, but when you have stuff like this that happens, like it's not like WWE invented sexism against women. It's a part of, unfortunately, the fabric of our culture. and you get rid of it by making it out, bringing it to spotlight, not hiding it under a carpet or editing it out of a film, and say, yeah, you know what? There are bad people in this world. Bad people do this. This is how bad people should be treated. I don't see anything wrong with that.
No. I think I'm not going to say anymore. I think you've summed it up nicely. Let's talk about some positives. The continuing push of AJ Styles is good. I want to compliment The Miz, who I know is a guy you like. I was thinking about it, and you know.
My son Alex loves The Miz.
Yeah, and I was thinking about
The
Miz.
And he's got some good points.
Yeah, I was thinking about The Miz, and you know, I'm not his biggest fan, but I think he's a decent wrestler. And also, I was trying to think, like, pretty much everyone who's been in a program with him for the last couple of years has come out better for it. The only one that was messed up was Sandow, but that wasn't his fault. That wasn't Miz's fault. That was WWE's fault for.
Totally. Oh, and I thought Sandow came out better.
He did, but he could have been an even bigger star if the WWE hadn't messed that up.
Right. That wasn't The Miz.
No, The Miz did everything he could to create, to make Sandow into a megastar, which he could have been if creative had any attention to detail.
Who was his valet before that?
Who, Miz?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think he's an announcer now.
I don't know.
Oh, jeez. What was his name?
Alex Riley.
Riley, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And you know what? I honestly, and nothing against Riley, I think they maximized what they could.
Oh, exactly. Like, I don't think they could have gotten more out of... The fact that Riley had a brief moment in the sun is pretty much credit to Miz, and that's kind of all that Riley... Yeah. Again, Riley's an okay guy, but that's it for Alex Riley.
Exactly.
But yeah, and I think the Styles thing is huge. I think he's really helping him with both the outside-of-the-ring segments and in-ring stuff. I mean, the fact that we saw two SmackDowns ago, the highlight of Styles giving a back fist and knocking out a veneer off of, you know, Miz's tooth. And you didn't hear maybe Miz was super mad about it, but you didn't hear, pretty much everything leaks these days. I didn't hear any story about Miz complaining. If anything, I think he really enjoyed it. I think he not enjoyed getting his, you know, his tooth fractured, but that it looks so good.
But and there's something, you know, like even if you're not happy of, you know, having a lemon and making lemonade, because his promo work the next night was beautiful.
It was great. And what an image, right? What an image to look at. Like, he was like, look at my tooth, you know? So I'm going to give Miz his props at least for the last couple of years of work and definitely for the style stuff. I think, he, you know, he gets people over. I think he's accepted that, you know, and I you know me, I don't like Miz, but I respect Miz, because it's almost like the John Scott situation where I don't think he should have main evented WrestleMania. Okay, look, I think that's a mistake. He never should have main evented it. But he put himself in that position to get that opportunity, right? It's just like John Scott said about the All-Star team. Maybe I don't deserve to be an All-Star, but guess what? I'm here. I'm one of the, whatever, 300 or 700 best hockey players in the world. That's not small. That is a very, very small select group of people, and I'm one of them.
And that's a high accomplishment.
And the same with The Miz. He worked his way from a guy in a reality show saying, oh, I'm going to be a WWE superstar, and sounding ridiculous, and then just doing it. I'm just doing it. And he put himself in that very, very small pool of people to be selected to be, you know, a world champion, which he was, and then WrestleMania main eventer, which is an even smaller pool.
Yep.
So again, hey, I might not be his biggest fan, but I don't see how you can't respect that. That man does his work. He put in the work.
And the funny thing is, you know, I go back when he debuted as a tag team with John Morrison, and I always thought Morrison had the look, he had the skills.
He was Shawn Michaels, Miz Jannetty.
I thought he was going to be like, you know, and Miz is going to be the cast. And, you know, you look a few years later and, wow. And I think that goes a lot to his desire and his heart to do stuff like that.
Much respect to John Morrison for his Lucha Underground work, obviously. But you're right. He
still is a great wrestler.
And he's a great wrestler.
But for whatever reason, it never worked at WWE. Yeah. Maybe he didn't want it or whatever. Or maybe the crowd wasn't. I thought he had the whole package.
Another positive. I was very happy to see Summer Rae back. I really missed her.
And she wrestled.
And she's okay. Like, she's not, like, I know she's not Sasha Banks or Becky Lynch or whatever. She's a good wrestler, I think. She's okay.
She can tell a story. Well, she did kind of in that match there in terms of, you know, getting it done, running out kind of thing. All the power to her.
And I know it's just a Total Divas promo thing, like, because they're both on Total Divas. But I thought if that's the purpose, hey, it didn't take too long. It was an okay match. Like you said, the character work was fine. It served its purpose. And I just really miss Summer Rae. I think I think she's my new Layla. You know, I think people didn't appreciate Layla. And now Layla's gone. And I think Summer Rae is my new Layla.
I think there are a few minor things that are starting to turn in the Divas division. And I like the fact that they're turning in a quieter way. You know, the three groups of three have now, I think, officially, all of them have now broken up. So that's, and they didn't do like this big thing about it. They're just, you know, slowly, quietly doing it, except with Sasha coming back. You know, Sasha and now Becky have an interesting storyline developing that has nothing to do with the belt. So it's expanding in a good way.
Yeah.
And it's going in a quieter, not sort of in a forced shove down your throat kind of way too.
Yeah, this is the way the Divas division should be. It should be like the other divisions. It should have, be able to sustain more than one angle. So in that sense, I'm all for the Charlotte B. Bella thing, and I'm all for the Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, Team Bad thing. So kudos to the women and whoever's, you know, putting forth that initiative. I hated to rush through this. I told you, Pop, before the show that we wouldn't
have
time.
Well, you'd be action-packed.
I told you, man. Action-packed. There's so much stuff. So, but let's at least touch upon the main event of Fastlane. Since we kind of, by talking about Raw and stuff, we've kind of talked about the other matches that are happening. Let's talk about the main event. Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar. What do you, just any thoughts you have?
Unless they surprise me, I'm not looking all that forward to it. I still think Roman Reigns is set to face Triple H at the thing, at WrestleMania. So the fact that I think the outcome to me is like 80% already certain doesn't interest me all that much. But I'm more interested in watching the whole thing to see what they set up for Mania. That's my curiosity.
We talked a little bit about it last episode. I'm all for it. I'm all for Roman Reigns. I'm telling you, those two, I'm sure they'll have to make it like a no DQ stipulation, because those seem to be the only situations where Roman Reigns really thrives. He's had some good matches otherwise, but definitely the ones that immediately come to my mind are multi-man, hardcore, cage match. Like, those are the Roman Reigns matches. And hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
Nope,
if that's his
nope,
thing,
nope.
That's his thing.
And it's power versus power too, right?
Sure. I think they will have a great match. Now, I've been wrong a lot recently. I was wrong about, just to go off on a little bit of a tangent, I thought the Deadpool movie was going to bomb. It is getting really good reviews. And
I saw it yesterday and it was fantastic.
Did you? Oh, it was really good?
Yes.
And it is by far, I've heard nothing but good things, and it is by far the biggest R-rated opening. Now, you know, some people are saying it's not a traditional R-rated movie, but it is an R-rated movie by the
R-rated movie. Yeah. I think regardless of its rating, I think it was one of the biggest Valentine Day movies
weekend. Yes, I think
weekend,
it was the biggest
ever.
Yeah.
And I think that alone is going to change, might reshape some of what Marvel does in the future, because they realize, hey, there is a market for that.
I hope not too much. But again, you said it's good, and people are telling me it's good, so maybe that is a good trend.
They took Ryan Reynolds at his word. They let him make the kind of movie that they wanted to make. They only, and I'm going to say this, they only gave him $58 million to do it.
What? They did not give him 50. What do you mean? He got paid? There's
no
way.
No, not him. I'm talking about the whole movie
cost.
Oh,
the budget, yeah.
The budget was only $58
million. Which for a superhero
movie is nothing. And in the first weekend, it made between $130 and $150,
like
depending
that.
A three-day, four-day, in North America. And another $130 in Europe. So a $60 million movie, and it's already grossed over $250 million.
So I may have been a bit off of my estimates for that one. I thought the dunk contests, I was telling people, dunk contests suck. Don't bother watching it. It was maybe the best dunk contest of all time, arguably.
I can't say for certain. It was the best Saturday night of all time.
It was definitely the best Saturday night. We won't go off on that now, but yeah, if anyone's an NBA fan and a wrestling fan, well, or just an NBA fan.
Except.
It was awesome.
What was the only thing wrong with this entire weekend in terms of Toronto was music. I don't know who was playing that Saturday night.
I love Walk Off the Moon.
See, you don't even know the band name, so you can't say that you like it. Woman is my destiny. She said,
ooh, shut up and dance with me. Oh, Walk the Moon. There's a Canadian band called Walk Off the Earth, so it's very confusing.
Yeah, like I said, you can't even say the band.
That was hilarious.
Say the band properly,
when they came out, I was dying.
The Anthem by Nelly Furtado.
Could have been better.
Yeah, blasted on Twitter.
She tried to do something different with it. She shouldn't have.
Loved the beard on Sting.
You and I agree. And the performance was good.
It was good.
By the way, I want to add, by the way, Pop and I are both over 30. That should be that probably bears mentioning.
But I think there's something that, you know, it probably would have better too. And then I think the Grammys.
I didn't see it.
Didn't like Gaga's.
I didn't see it. I heard it was okay, but I didn't see it.
It was okay, but and it came from a good place. Like I personally don't like her as an artist, but I understand that her love for David Bowie and and what they tried to do, I didn't like it. That's all I'm saying. So yeah, music was the only thing bad this weekend.
So my point is, I've been wrong a lot lately. I hope I'm not wrong about this Roman Reigns Triple H thing. I think they'll be good. I think, and especially since Triple H, man, he hasn't had that many great like WrestleMania main events. And I mean main events. He's had good Mania matches. I'm talking about when he main events.
But see, and you're talking here. I know we're gonna go over, and I don't care.
We'll cut some stuff.
Maybe. Is you're talking about Mania. You're not talking about the Fastlane main event.
No.
So like, so
I'm past okay. It
so
now, you're right.
So you spoke volumes about the Fastlane main event.
I'm past
then.
It. Okay. I'm past it. But no, it should be a good match. It should be a good match.
Should be a good match.
Charlotte V. Bella should be okay. Kevin Owens, Dolph Ziggler
should be great. I like the
volume 15 should be good.
It's third one. Give him a break.
It's more than three. Oh, it's definitely more than three. Yes, they wrestled. I mean, as part of like this current series, row, but they've wrestled many times on TV. And then AJ Styles, Chris Jericho. That's a rubber match. I think that will be three.
That will be three, yes.
That should be good. So I'm not as excited for Fastlane as I thought I would be.
Is that all the matches?
Oh, there's also, well, the drive back. We did mention the six-man tag with the Wyatts.
Oh, six men?
Yeah.
Oh, so not eight.
No. Yeah, no. Oh, no, Bray Wyatt's not even... oh, Lord. Okay, let's moving on. And then a Diva tag match, which should be okay. So it looks okay, but it kind of just looks like a Raw. It actually looks a little bit like a Raw with a couple of title matches on it.
Which I don't mind it being a little underwhelming because I think it kind of can make WrestleMania, the next pay-per-view, look better that way. I'm just happy that I only paid $11.99 for it.
Yes.
Well, I paid for the Royal Rumble, but...
So we'll count this as another one I was wrong about, by the way, because I was saying, I think, on our last episode, I like the concept of Fastlane, which I still do, but I also thought they'd do more with it this year, which they doesn't look like they did.
Not much.
So, and it looks like the first Fastlane was better. That had Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, I remember that, which was a really, really huge match for Roman Reigns.
Yeah, but that one, I think, was like almost last minute because they almost had to.
Something, yeah.
Because of the reaction that Roman got at Royal Rumble.
And there's Daniel Bryan again. But before we close up, let's talk about, like you said, this weekend, you're going to the show.
Smash?
Yes.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Fateful Eight, February 20th. This is at Franklin Horner Community Center in Etobicoke.
Back to usual spot.
Yep. And like we said, Frankie the Mobster, Candice LeRae. That's going to be a big one. And then a bunch of tag matches. Super Smash Brothers, Team Rockstar Pro, The Fraternity, The Overdogs, Tabernacle Team.
Sorry, it's you can't say that on live radio.
No. Tabernacle. TNT. My Loyal Machines. Looks like we got an appearance from Jason Bennett, maybe? And then Chris Hero stepping in for an injured Davey Richards to team up with Eddie Edwards. So that's another huge name added.
And they're going to be fighting the Overdogs. I'm curious to see who's going to advance in that round.
So this is a tournament.
It's a tournament, and here's the interesting thing. I think originally they were going to do it, you know, four matches, the semifinals, then your final match. But there's been so much more added. Gargano's going up against Mike Bailey, I believe. One of our up-and-coming favorite people, Bennett, the rapper.
Kevin Bennett. Yes, love his character.
After he
so obnoxious.
After he got interrupted, and I'm assuming rudely last time, he wanted to come up and do another performance. So he's going to be doing a performance, which I hope is rudely interrupted. And so now I think what they're doing is that they have the four tag team matches, and the winners of those, all four tag teams in one match. So I don't know what you call it, a four tag team corner match or something like that?
Yeah, something like four corners, yeah. Sure.
So I think that's what they're doing.
This card looks so good. I'm really bummed. Unfortunately, I'm working that day. I won't be able to make it. Hopefully, we can have Suave on within the next couple of weeks, maybe. We'll talk to him, right? See if we can get him to talk about this show and a lot of
Smash things.
So a huge, huge spring they have coming up.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so I hope you have fun at the show, Pop. Again, I want to say that's Sunday, February 20th. Saturday.
Saturday.
So I'm sorry, Saturday, February 20th. October. Franklin Horner Community Center. But
doors open at 7, show starts at 8.
Yes. But let's end with again saying thank you to Daniel Bryan for his years of hard work and hoping that he and Brie start a family and have many, many children. Farewell, Daniel Bryan, as you go into the final countdown of. It sounds like he's ill. Like he's. You know what I mean. I'm just trying to segue into the final countdown. All right, Pop, let's.
Just hope you have as much fun in the next chapter of your life as you did in the previous one.
That was much better than what I said. Thanks, everyone.
Later.